everyone. Welcome to Made for Music. I am your host, Duncan Byerjohn. The reason I started this podcast was growing up, music was my ultimate passion, but I didn't know how to get started. So this podcast seeks to depict a comprehensive view of the music world, from the artistry to the business, so you can discover the resources available to you, and most importantly, the stories behind the people making things happen. If you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. I truly appreciate that extra effort. Without further ado, here is the next episode of Made for Music.
Thanks for being patient with me. Seems like we've been trying to get this set up for a minute.
Yeah, no, it's all good. It's crazy times, man. But dude, I really dig the stuff you're putting out. And it's wonderful to meet you, I guess. It's funny in the virtual sense.
Yeah, hell yeah, man. But
I saw y'all for like the park. Was it a Park Ave? One of the nights that they did? I saw you at Sunset. I don't know if it was one of the Park Ave events or if I just happened to see y'all there.
Oh, okay. But, yeah, we did a Park Ave event with New Track City.
Okay, that was it then.
Yeah.
Because I had just interviewed them at the time, I think. And so it was like right after that was that event.
Yeah, those are the homies, man. I've been cool with them ever since.
They're electric live.
Yeah, dude. They fucking gas. I've seen them a couple times now, and they don't stop, bro.
In the amount of videos they put out too, maybe I'm exaggerating, but I felt like right around that time, it was like a video every 2 to 4 weeks or something.
Bro, yeah. They fucking grind. Latest thing they put out, they've been just pushing it, man. They've been getting
They're doing numbers. Is the Plan B, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Much love to them.
Absolutely. Shouts out to the former podcast guest New Track City. And on that note, welcome to Made for Music. Today's friend of the podcast dove into the music world via Fruity Loops at the age of 15, and lucky for us, that evolved into songwriting a few years later. Inspired by the likes of Frank Ocean and Pharrell, you can hear their finesse in his delivery as he cruises over some of the vibiest tracks coming out of the Northwest. So without further ado, fresh off the release of Sus's new single Mount Olympus, please welcome one of the smoothest frontmen in the Seattle scene, Jesse Deshaun.
What up?
Not much, man. Big fan of what Sus has got going on, and I know we'll talk about that project a lot during the pod, but I was curious, is that the first recorded project that you put out?
No. So way back when I was in a rap duo called Chill Crew, when I lived in Portland, and we put out four projects. But during that time, I always wanted to like be in a band and shit. I figured I don't know. I'd seen a couple I don't even know what like made me. I think it was just because I was kind of shy. Just growing up, I was a bit shy. And so being on the spotlight like that was just fucking like, you know, like just goddamn, it was like next level. And so to have the band is just like, you know, when I'm not feeling like I want to fucking perform and dance the whole entire time, they can kind of share my light, you know? So I think that was like the primary drive for me wanting to be in a band. And to answer your question, not my first recordings, but certainly my baby.
Right on. Yeah, dude, I mean, I love it. I've been jamming. Mount Olympus was sick because I was jam with like Butter for a while, and then when that hit, it was like so cool because it obviously is like y'all's sound but felt like a switch up, and I may be totally wrong on that. But it's been a lot of fun to just hear how y'all are evolving, kind of pushing yourselves, which is cool.
I appreciate it, man. Yeah, it's a trip. That's the one thing about the band, as you probably know, it's like a whole different thing trying to record music with a band versus myself. It takes fucking forever. It takes a lot of coordinating. And so we have a total of like 6 songs out. I think Mount Olympus is the 7th song that we have out that's like fully recorded and mastered and all that shit. But we've been doing it for like 4 years, you know? And so it's just interesting to think about folks' perspective of us based on our recordings versus like what we do in practice, you know? Because our EP, I don't even think we play one song off of our EP when we're at shows regularly, and it's a different version of the song. And so like there's not one song on the EP that we use anymore, you know? So
right,
it's just kind of, it's quite different, but Mount Olympus is one of our newest songs, which has been nice. So yeah, man, I appreciate the love.
Yeah, of course. And did that come to fruition just because of like gelling as a band, you think, of like finally locking in, or I shouldn't say finally, but just like as you evolved as artists, I feel like that was something for me, was like chemistry significantly changed the songwriting process.
Yeah, definitely. You know, that particular song came together just pretty uniquely. It was, it just really like came together so quickly, and it was completely a jam. It was just like, typically when we practice, we start off by just doing a jam, and nice. That was kind of like the idea behind that, but it came together just like so quick. I don't even think all of our members were there that day. I think Matt, our keyboardist, was like out of town or something. And so, I mean, as you can hear, it primarily focuses on guitar, bass, and drums as far as the instrumentation. That's because Matt wasn't there.
So, yeah. So what was his reaction like when that song was coming through? Did he, I'd have to listen through again, but so was when the writing happened, was like, cool, we've got this. And then in the recording process, he just laid down some layers sort of thing, or yeah. What did that look like?
Yeah. So there's a couple songs when Matt is kind of tucked away a bit. So it's no biggie for him, but what he does over the vocals and stuff is he'll add different vocal textures. He also sings. And so, So he came in and we were like, just keep it. I think he originally like played some shit to it, but made it beautiful, and we wanted it to be gritty, you know?
Yeah.
So he came in with that in part of just like, I don't know, these like big dark keys, and just kind of, you know, we were like, dude, yes, that's exactly.
Yeah. I remember seeing y'all, and I was just blown away from the get go because of the way that y'all connect is incredible to me. And that was just from like a first time seeing y'all. But, and then I forget, I guess it's probably not from the EP, or maybe I'm completely wrong on this, but y'all did a song where I think you just stepped off to the side and Matt sang for a second. I was like, what is this? Where did this person come from? It was insane. But then just like the way that you all come together, because obviously like I've actually seen like Amanda, I think it was first like via just like Instagram, like popping up in my feed for like bass licks and stuff. And I remember seeing y'all, I was like, for some reason I recognize this person. And I remember just like piecing it together of like all the incredible musicians that are here. And I was like, how did all y'all come together? So I guess I'm kind of jumping the gun, but do you mind walking me through like how y'all found each other? Cause you mentioned you're in Portland before, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Basically I was unemployed in Portland. This is just from my perspective. Obviously everybody has their different, you know, takes on this, but I was unemployed in Portland, couldn't find a job for shit. And I got the first job that I applied for in Seattle. So I moved up here like the following week. I think I got the job and moved like within 4 days or something like that. Anywho, I got on Facebook and one of my homies that I used to work with, Kaylee, she was like, oh shit, I just moved to Seattle too. So we started kicking it heavy. And so about, I don't know, a year goes by or something, and she's like dating this dude, and she's like, yeah, I don't really fuck with him, but I don't know, we'll see. And it's Taylor, it's our guitarist. And,
oh no way.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
And so she was like, I guess she was like telling Taylor at the time that like I rap or something. I had a bunch of shit on SoundCloud, and I guess he listened to it, and he like hit me up one day, and he was like, hey bro, like, would you be down to come through? And I was like, oh hell yeah. And so I went over to his house, and at the time he was living with Matt, our keyboardist. And so, but I didn't even know. I mean, I was just like, whatever, dude. I'm just like here to kick it. And we went through a bunch of beats and exchanged beats and stuff, and all was good. And a couple months later or something like that, he hit me up again, and he was like, yo, would you be interested in like jamming? And I was like, definitely, like, dog, you don't even know. I've been dying, because at this time, like, you know, my whole duo thing had kind of like fallen apart, and you know, I left that in Portland. I hadn't really mm-hmm. done any shows in a long time, so it was just me recording music and just kind of, you know, like rapping in my car, you know, basically.
Yeah.
And I think I did maybe two shows or some shit since I had moved up to Seattle. And so, yeah, I went over and jammed with them. And at that time it was Taylor on the guitar, his homie John, who wrote quite a bit of the bass lines that we have. So Amanda's first original bass line with Sus is Mount Olympus.
Oh wow, no way.
Yeah, so all the other stuff with John. And then it was a drummer that Taylor worked with. He was in a different band. His name is Andrew. And then Matt was there. And all Matt did was play keys at first. That's all he did. We didn't even fucking know that he sang until that song that you're talking about, when he was like, oh, I have this idea. And this is like fucking like six sessions in, like, of us kind of finding a couple songs that we're fucking with and like learning to, you know, write songs together. He's like, oh, by the way, I sing. And we're all like, what the fuck, dude?
And he just comes out with this like gorgeous voice.
yeah it was crazy. Yeah. So yeah, that's kind of how Sus came together for me, personally, is that these fools were friends and they invited me in. Moving down the line, the drummer of the original Sus, before we were even Sus, I don't even know what the fuck our name was, but he dropped out because he was in another band, and he was like, ah, it's just too much for me to do two bands at once. And we were like, cool, man, no problem. And so I hit up, so me and Andrew Savoy, who's also in Remember Face, mm-hmm. you know Andy Savoy?
I don't believe so, no.
Okay, yeah, so Andy has been in the music scene in Seattle for a minute now. He was in a hip hop group called New Era back in the day. And yeah, he's put on shows here, like regular shows. I think it was called like The Last Slice or something like that at the Crocodile Back Bar.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he was putting on that show. So he's just been around forever, and we went to high school together. And I hit him up after our drummer left, and I was just like, yo, do you know of any drummers? And he was like, bro, me. Like, what are you talking about? I am a drummer, and I didn't know. You know, so I was like, oh, sick, bro. Like, you try to come fuck with us? And he was like, yeah, you know, I'm down, but he's like kind of resistant to it. Like, what's this going to look like? And I mean, we already had some songs established. And so we were like, yeah, this is what it looks like. And he was like, boom, I'm down. And then our final member, Amanda, after about a year or so, gosh, no, it must have been about 2.5 years, because Amanda's been with us for a year and a half. So about 2.5 years into it, John wasn't really coming to practice. All love to him, but he wasn't really coming to practice, kind of falling through and going through some shit.
Mm-hmm.
So we ultimately had to have the conversation, like, dude, are you with it or not? And he was like,
right.
Nah. So we put a Facebook ad on Facebook, and just, hey, we're looking for a bassist, anybody out there? And
wow,
was like one of the last people to respond to us.
Uh-huh.
We were like, fuck yeah, like, she's hella tight. And so
good.
Yeah, we brought her on, so it was dope.
That's awesome. And you mentioned, or how did that change the dynamic, I guess, because you mentioned that her first original bass line, at least for the recordings, is Mount Olympus. So did y'all change the songs that you're performing, or how did that look? Did you decide to like kind of audit the songs and change them up, or let her just do her thing when you went live, or what did that look like?
Yeah. So that's the first original recorded bass line that we have with Amanda. So
right.
She learned all of our songs like very quickly, which was super dope. I mean, she came with it. It was, we were like three sessions in and she knew all our shit. And even the first session, she was on point. But there were a couple songs, you know, Amanda is significantly younger than us. She's definitely the youngest member. So she would, what's cool about her being there is that she kind of like will give us kind of like, I don't know, like a refreshed sense of what she feels is tight. And so,
yeah, interesting.
But it's not like she's mean or anything or like too pushy about it. But it's just like, that's not fly. We should go with this, you know? And you know, we need that. Sometimes everybody needs that. Sometimes it's us that we, you know, we're saying that. And so, anywho, there were a couple songs that she adjusted the bass line a little bit, just to fit her own style, you know? And we are totally down for that. We've always kind of had Sus be more of like a bass driving band. That's really like what we strive for is the bass lines. And so for her to bring it up in her own way was just like, yeah, no problem. We're into it.
For sure. And how did that challenge you as a lyricist and as like a frontman with all these changes? Because like really solidifying that lineup, of course, chemistry shifts as people come and go. So what was your experience with that? In what was the biggest like learning, I guess, as a both a lyricist and performer, like as you saw the band kind of build itself up into what it is now?
Yeah, man. I mean, I think it was pretty tight to have a woman on stage with us. Like that was a huge thing. I felt like, you know, it brought some diversity and also a young woman, you know. As far as like for me lyrically, I don't think too much had changed for me. I, you know, I suppose that with that said about, you know, Amanda bringing kind of a younger perspective to this, whenever she's like, dude, that was dope, then I'm pumped up, you know, like,
yeah, for sure.
Amanda loves me, you know, so we're good. But really, I would say the biggest change, we do manage ourselves. And so, I deal a lot with like booking the shows and communicating with different bands and doing that type of stuff. And so honestly, bringing in Amanda made it a lot easier because our communication got a lot better and everybody seemed to become a lot tighter. The whole John thing was tough to go through. You know, it's tough to lose a member and you're kind of looking at it and you're like, God, are we all continuing? Like what's going on? You know, and that was really tough leading up to that. But then Amanda came in and we kind of had a breath of fresh air, like, okay, we're still doing it and we still sound pretty good. And so, you know, like, let's do this. And so, that was really the biggest change, is just kind of getting that confidence back that like we have all the pieces still, we can still push, you know? So
for sure. Yeah. Cause like an identity switch up, you know?
Yeah.
I can relate to that. Cause actually the group that I'm in with my youngest brother, our middle brother used to be the bassist. And so I can kind of relate to that. When someone leaves and then you have to like fill that up, it's like, is this going to still work?
Yeah.
So that's awesome that y'all were able to navigate that and come through.
Totally.
So as far as like performance and whatnot, did you feel a shift or had you been performing a lot before the current lineup or did most of the live performances come after the fact?
No, actually we about the same, honestly. I mean, we were pretty comfortable with performing with each other. I think we started performing, I want to say like the December after we started in August. So it was only a couple months in that we started performing. So we had plenty of time that we were doing shows, and somehow, I don't know what it was, man. Like somehow we were getting all these like headlining acts, which sounds dope up front, but like, and we were pumped about it at the time. We were like, hell yeah, we're getting headlining acts. But then you kind of learn the dynamics of music and you're like, fuck, that means like we're closing. And but with that said, we were like maintaining regular shows. I mean, maintaining shows had never been an issue for us. And so it was, you know, nothing changed when Amanda came in, I guess is what I'm saying. And the current lineup that we have, we were in full stride prior to COVID. With that said, you know, I'm from Portland, Andy's from Portland. So we get shows down in Portland. Our band is obviously based in Seattle, so we get shows in Seattle, and then Taylor is from Spokane. So we're also getting shows.
Nice.
So it was like this kind of triangle of shows going pretty regularly.
That's awesome that you've got like the three home bases.
Yeah.
Because I feel like those are all cities that are kind of tough to crack via Seattle alone. So it's nice that y'all have like a, well, I should actually ask, does it feel like a homecoming show in a way? Like, do you feel like those networks have worked for y'all as you bounce between the various cities?
Definitely, yeah. Our Portland and Spokane followings are like fucking crazy, dude. Like, we're so lucky to have those two cities. Seattle is definitely a tougher city, that's for sure. I mean, none of us are from here besides Amanda. But you know, people have started to know about us, and what I've been trying to do is get acts out to those different cities, and so that I can kind of connect everybody so that we can all share the wealth, if you will. But yeah, I mean, like where we were when COVID started, prior to COVID, like selling out shows in Portland and Spokane at around, I don't know, like 150 capacity ish. That's something we could definitely do regularly. And so
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Was it Spokane that y'all did with All Star Opera a few months back?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Mountain show with All Star Opera. Yeah. That was so much fun, man.
Yeah. I just saw the stuff online. I remember just seeing the video and the energy that I saw just on the online stuff. I was like, that is crazy.
Yeah.
Like in the best way.
That particular venue, there was a spot called the Bartlett in Spokane, and that was like the premier spot. And those owners closed that venue down and opened up Lucky You Lounge. And so Lucky You Lounge is where we had that show, but that particular venue was like known because of the work that they did at the Bartlett. And so, yeah, that was an awesome show. We put a lot into that. And All Star Opera is like family for us, you know. Seth McDonald, big shout out to him. That's my guy. So.
Yeah. Did he help, or did I see correctly that y'all were putting a run together as far as like Sus was going to go on tour before the COVID stuff hit? Did I see that correctly?
We were working with Seth to book a tour. And there were definitely a couple of dates that we were entertaining together. And so it was kind of coming together, you know. I think we were a bit premature in it, just with releases, you know. But shoot, it gave us an idea of what it takes. And luckily, I guess not luckily, fuck COVID, but we didn't go through with it because, you know, all this shit's popping off, so.
Stuff, yeah. Just shouts out to Seth, prior guest on here, and he helped us do our first ever tour as well. And just awesome getting to work with him, and just such a good dude. I mean, obviously, you know, but just for the general folks listening, just a great dude to connect with for sure.
Yeah, yeah, that's my guy. But,
yeah, and did he work on Mount Olympus with y'all? Did I see that, or am I making that up?
Oh, yeah, That's kind of how we got connected with Seth, is that Andy knew Seth from working with him in the past, and we got the plug to Ruby Room through Seth and Andy, and so Seth has recorded all of our stuff. And with Mount Olympus, man, that was probably one of my favorite recording sessions that we've done. But Seth and Ty Lee, who's All Star Opera's drummer, they came down and helped us record Mount Olympus and another song that we'll be releasing soon. But yeah, it's just like family with Seth, you know. It's you just like, you want that type of person to be recording you, just so that, you know, I can trust his ear. He trusts to make, you know, suggestions and things, and we won't like fucking take it personally or some shit like that. And so it's nice to work with Seth. Yeah.
That's so clutch to have too, because just as in my personal opinion is that chemistry with the producer is just as important, or the engineer is just as important as that within the band, for that reason you just said, like making him like a, it would be for y'all like a fifth or sixth member kind of thing. Yeah. Versus like, you know, having to go to battle with whoever, you know, to keep your vision alive sort of thing.
Yeah. So we typically were going through mixing with Seth, but he got pretty busy as of recently with his whole you know, he's teaching folks how to market and things like that. So we went with Nima Schemes at a Ruby Room for mixing, and that was fucking sick. Like, that dude killed that mix. And then shout out to Breakpoint in Portland. He always comes through with us, Adam Stranley, for our masters. So
yeah. Right on. That's cool that you all are keeping it like Northwest, Portland, Seattle thing. That's pretty sick. Has that been like conscious, or just by proxy of everyone being from the greater Northwest, that was the case?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just by proxy, to be honest with you. It's a bunch of homies up here, and so, you know, I think what's been more conscious is just kind of accepting the Northwest as a place to like, that creates the sounds that we make. Typically a little moodier music that we make, it's a bit darker for the most part. I mean, even more upbeat, lively songs, it reflects, you know, the rain. Yeah. And you know, so, but as far as who we work with, it's people that I fuck with. I mean, you know, that's why.
We've talked a bit about kind of the current stuff you all got going on, but I am curious, because you've got the live band now, right? But you started on Fruity Loops. So how does that impact your approach to like writing? Because obviously you've been a beat maker.
Yeah.
So what does that process look like for you? Is it a combo of, you mentioned jamming and making your own beats? Are you still doing that? Or
yeah. You know, I never like aimed to be a huge producer. I've always kind of done that just for fun. And so it's kind of interesting, but the beat making, I'll never stop making beats. I've always made beats. I'll always make beats. I'm decent at making beats. I don't, you know, but I don't really market myself as a beat maker. I would say that the biggest thing that has come into play from my beat making is the process of mixing, and being able to sit down with somebody and evaluate exactly what type of sounds I want, what type of effects, things like that. As a writer, that has allowed me to kind of think a little deeper into how I write. For that reason, you know, to bring it back to, how could I mix this? You know, how could we utilize the beat or whatever it is, the instrumentation to make this pop? And so typically in the post-recording sessions, I'm just like wide-eyed and just like ready to go. And like, let's try this. It didn't work. Okay, let's try this. That's fire, you know? And that has been pretty fun, honestly, that just kind of learning myself through the whole post-production stuff is so much fun, you know.
For sure. And so do you know a lot of the time going in, do you have a vision in your head of, oh, I think it's headed this way? Or like you mentioned, is it going to be more experimental? Like, cool, we've got the inputs now and let's really bring this thing to life.
Yeah. I think going in, I'll have a very general idea of what I'd like. And, you know, typically I'm doing that whole mixing with Seth. You know, folks will bring up ideas and things like that, and I'm big into ideas, and then I'm, you know, we adjust from there. But there's a lot of it that I am experimental with too, you know, and so it just depends. Sometimes, you know, I'll rap and rap and rap in my head all day long, and then I'll go and record it, and I'm like, not quite what I was looking for, you know, and so right. I'll have to go back and reshape it or say, you know, one word differently. Sometimes it's just that. But, you know, I think just having that ear for beat making and just kind of how to make stuff sound good together has been a huge help for writing. And I think it's not even something that I think about anymore. It just kind of naturally comes.
Yeah. And because you've got such a smooth delivery, do you think that, I guess that's kind of what you were just alluding to, but do you feel like that helped you like learn where the pocket was, kind of just develop that innate sense of how you play in like really as a percussionist, like as a vocalist, or am I completely just whiffing there?
Yeah, I've never really thought about that. It definitely could be. I'll also say that I think where that whole delivery in the pocket thing comes from as well is ever since I was little, I just kind of had this thing where I would try very hard to learn songs and mimic them very as best as I could. And so I have this memory of being in the parking lot and I was like rapping this Jay-Z verse, and it was like me and a bunch of buddies in the car, and one of my homies was like, damn bro, like you actually sound like him. And
oh.
I was like, oh, that's crazy. And so when I heard that out loud, I was like, I've been trying to do that for years. You know, it's just like part of me learning songs. I try to, like when I find some shit that I like musically, I listen to it so often. Like I will just run it to the ground pretty much and try to just learn all the little finesses of what they did with their voice and like, oh my gosh, what were their ad libs, all that stuff, and until it's just like tiring, you know. And
yeah,
I think that's where I kind of got that from. I developed a flow, if you will, early on by just really trying to mimic different rappers, and that was even before I was doing music, you know. Yeah,
that's awesome. And so did you mentioned Jay-Z, but did you have other rappers that you really aspired to kind of mimic their style when you were first starting out?
Yeah, not so much Jay-Z actually. Jay-Z's hella tight. I got hella respect for Jay-Z, don't get me wrong. But I've never been a huge fan of Jay-Z, honestly, so it's kind of weird.
Yeah,
but you know, growing up, I really liked Busta Rhymes. Like that fool, it because that would be a challenge for me, right? Like how the fuck do you rhyme like Busta Rhymes, bro? Like I still can't do it sometimes. I'm like, what, how do you do that? And so Black Thought, I've always held him at like as one of the best MCs like ever, bro. Like that fool is crazy. So that's definitely been one of my rapping inspirations. Growing up, when I first started rapping, actually, me and my boy John Bells, the other member of Chill Crew, he's really the one who kind of taught me how to rap, and just like, you know, he was like, Brad, just, you got to do it. I guess I should give a little backstory on him, because this is the early Jesse Deshaun rapper days. But So John and I went to high school together as well. And we learned each other. We learned of each other's music by being in class together. And he was like, hey, bro, I got this mixtape. And I was like, all right. I fucking buy it, and it was fire, bro. Like, it was fucking fire.
Yeah,
he was rapping over some crazy shit too, like some Jay Dilla, like, you know, sounding like Big L and stuff. And I was just like, what is this? Like, that's crazy. I haven't ever found a local artist that I had like really liked. I don't think I was really looking, but you know, I'm like 15 or some shit,
right?
Like, hey bro, I make beats. And so he was like, shoot him. And so I shot him, and he wrote to one of my beats, and I was like, damn, what the fuck. And that feeling, like, to have somebody over your beat was like crazy.
Yeah.
So we became like very good friends. We became best friends. He at one point was living with me. His mom like moved out to Beaverton, pretty far away from Portland. And so we worked together at the same job and shit. And we would skateboard around the city, you know, trying to do our little tricks and shit. And that's when I started rapping. And so at that time I was listening to a lot of Lupe Fiasco, Kanye West, and just like, I was kind of finding that neo soul rap around that time. And I think that's kind of what developed my, like, I don't want to exactly say conscious, but more like concept based rap, where like I try to find a topic. Interestingly enough, Mount Olympus is not one of those types of songs. I was just like, that was more of like a off tops type of thing, you know?
Yeah, you're like, it's time for bars.
Yeah. Which is typically how I break like a writer's block or something. I'll just like, all right, let me just spit, you know? At that time I was super inspired by cats like that, just kind of like the backpack rappers and shit. Big Sean was up there too for me when he was dropping the Finally Famous volume. In particular was like crazy to me. And I was dabbling a little bit into Wiz Khalifa. I really liked the Cushion OJ, obviously. I mean, that's a fucking classic. But you know, I had always like, between those types of rappers, Lupe and Kanye were like gods to me, you know? And we didn't even talk about Pharrell, so.
Yeah. Well, I was gonna say, that you talked about the neo soul really being a big influence and whatnot. How did that? Do you think that carried through, or drew you to that band aspect? Just because it does, like when I definitely hear that in Sus. So, do you think that drew you in, or you mentioned you'd always kind of wanted to go more there? How the band dynamic really helped you come through as an artist. But was that something that was conscious at the time when you were listening to these guys, or it was just the sound itself that you were drawn to, and coming into a band down the road was just by happenstance?
Yeah. You know, that's something I had never really considered, to be honest with you. I mean, I loved the Roots, and instrumentation wasn't even really in the forefront of my mind at all. I think that by this time that I'm rapping, when I'm about 19-ish and starting to do shows, I'm recognizing with beat making that, you know, you can't really get the same sound in like a digital guitar that you will by somebody playing it. And right. So I had become aware of those types of things. And so listening to the Roots from that perspective, somebody like the Roots or like samples, you know, from gosh, you name it, everybody samples, that had kind of opened my eyes to the idea of a band. But again, you know, really what I found through performing was that so much attention was on me. I had this moment when, so back in the Chill Crew days, I lived in Eugene for the most part of that. I went to U of O.
Oh, and, okay. I'm a U of O grad. That's badass.
Oh, really? Go
Ducks.
Yeah.
Go Ducks.
Yeah, yeah. So I was living there and going to school there. We were doing shows down there. I had a buddy at OSU in Corvallis, about 45 minutes away, as you know. And he was in a fraternity, and so he invited us out to do a show. And this is like one of my first couple of shows. And I fucked up. Like, I fucking forgot all my lines and shit. And this is like my worst nightmare, you know what I'm saying? Like, as this shy guy who's like trying to rap, and I'm like, fuck, I forgot my lines so bad, man. And so kind of made this like vow to myself, I'm never going to do this again. It's definitely happened before, but I mean, it's definitely happened again since then. But what I found through performing with John in Chill Crew is that we had so much attention on us, you know, and not just for the fact that I was shy and didn't want all that attention, but more so for also the crowd. It's like, I would start to go to shows and see like bigger groups of rappers coming out, and like, okay, now my attention's on this person versus just, you know, sitting and watching one person rap the whole time. It's just like, you know, nothing against it. There's definitely rappers that I go and watch and it's just them, and I'm like, fuck, you killed it, bro. But for me personally, I was like, damn, how much more involved are you as a participant of the show when you can watch the guitarist, or you can watch the drummer, or the bassist, or the keyboard, or the rapper, you know? And so I really was drawn to that. And when Taylor hit me up, like, yo, you trying to come jam? I was like, oh, bro, say less, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And how did you, I think a lot of people can relate to being artists and creating, but also being like very shy, and obviously getting on stage, even for folks that aren't, can be really intimidating. What have you found helps you get in the mindset or prepare to go on stage? Especially as someone who's like, you know, self-proclaimed like more on the shy side.
Yeah. I definitely lost a lot of my shyness. That's for sure. You know?
Yeah.
I don't really think I'm a shy person for the most part anymore. You know, I've had several things, that I was involved in which I had to, like in high school, I was involved in a Black leadership program, and one of the directors of that program, like, super believed in me and was putting me in front of like a lot of people. And so I've done speeches in front of like as much as 500 people before.
Oh, wow.
So there were kind of some things that broke that for me, and I had done the in front of people performances in one way or another. But I think it was mostly about my own self-consciousness, you know, how do I feel? Am I confident in what I do? So over time, you know, I really kind of over time kicked that aside. With the band though, that idea that the attention is going to be all over the place made it change and adapt for me to be, how can I show up to also support them in making this whole thing come together? And so with that said, you know, that how I prepare before a show is I typically, I'm not a huge religious person. I'm very spiritual, but I typically go on, what I jokingly call an anxiety walk.
I do that with you.
Dude, yeah. And I just get out there, get some fresh air. And I basically just ask, you know, the higher powers to give me the power to give these people a good show and put my all into it. And, you know, that usually eases me. And so, then you know right when you go out there, some switches and you're a performer now. So yeah,
100%. Do you have it where it's like that first like 20 seconds is like the setting the tone kind of thing?
Yes.
That's how I feel. I'm like, all our shows I think start with guitar. I'm like, if I can nail the first 20 seconds, I'm good. But if I somehow, which this is a terrible mindset for me to take, I'm like, if something goes wrong in the first 20 seconds, like I definitely like, oh, we're in for it. You know what I mean? But
damn, dude, yeah. That's to yourself, man.
Yeah.
Luckily, so it works out so perfectly for me because our very first song that we open with is a song that's like all instrumental. And so it's kind of like this build up and it's very moody and shit. And I don't have any part of it. So I'm just like kind of sitting there, like pumping myself up and just kind of allowing the music to get into me. And then I go on stage and it's like, you know, the crowd is already warmed up from that. So we've set ourselves up for me personally, you know, selfishly, but for me to not really have any pressure. But still, you know, you get on stage and I'm sure it's similar with playing an instrument, but like there's a lot of words to remember. And sometimes my muscle memory, like I'm absolutely a muscle memory rapper. I am not a huge freestyler at all. I really have to practice if I want to do that shit. But I couldn't tell you like the middle of one of my verses. I couldn't start it from the middle and like tell you what line it is. I have to start from the beginning and go all the way through. Even if it's like quickly in my head, that's just how I am. And so if something gets fucked up in my mind and I'm like, forget a word and kind of stumble, like I hate that shit. Luckily I've learned how to stumble out of that and I'm fine enough to freestyle. I can, you know, I've definitely been on stage and just completely fucked off a verse and been like, freestyle mode, you're going to get through this.
Yeah.
Baby, the hook is coming, but
damage control is too aggressive of a way to put it, but that whole
I
think that's a huge skill to have, to just be able to go shoot, keep rolling.
Yeah
That's awesome to hear. And that's one of the things, and just like shouts out to y'all, because again, like when I saw you, the musicianship of y'all and just the vibe that y'all put together is incredible, because I think you really do capture it and you just play off each other so nicely. And I know there's like a lot of hours of rehearsal that go into all this, but it just does seem so seamless when y'all hit the stage. So,
oh man, I appreciate it.
Yeah. So I guess, before I get ready to let you go, where can folks find y'all at?
For sure. Yeah. We do have a website. It's susvibes.com. And that's SUSVIBES.com. Find our merch and all of our music all over. We're on any streaming platforms, all that stuff. Mount Olympus, we're working with an advertiser to kind of help us boost the numbers. That's a crazy thing about, you know, the whole streaming stuff is like so much music is going on right now that it's so important as a musician to have a budget for your marketing, just because otherwise you're just throwing it out there. Maybe that's what you want to do and that's fine. But shit, if you want to catch numbers, you gotta put some money into that. So we're launching that campaign on the 4th, the 5th, I believe, right after elections. We'll let the elections go by and then.
That's a smart move and really advice. So my day job's marketing, and that's something that I think a lot of folks mess up when they go to market, is like a big event, especially like that, anything that's got national or even regional significance.
Yeah.
Don't launch something within like that time. You know, like I saw some friends that are like posting and like I don't think they thought through when the release date's like election day. And I was like, you're going to want to move that. You know what I mean? So that's smart on y'all to push, because hey, it's money too, right? Like your advertising dollars, like, you're literally losing money if you launch something around an event like that day of, or so. That's exciting, man.
You're messing with people's moods and stuff. You know, we were kind of That's why, I mean, we were ready with Mount Olympus for a minute, but everything with the protests and all that shit, like, it just didn't feel right to be promoting ourselves during that time, you know? It's just like, mm-hmm. you got to know when to do it, you know?
For sure.
Yeah.
And so with that, obviously Mount Olympus is out now. And I guess without dropping names necessarily, because this will be dropping before that even campaign starts, but is there, what kind of stuff y'all got in the works? I know it's obviously tough with this COVID. How can people support y'all? You mentioned merch on the website and all that.
Yeah.
Streaming links will be sure to get up, but yeah, what should folks be looking forward to? Obviously bumping Mount Olympus and...
Definitely, yeah.
Anything you should be shouting out?
Yeah, we do have another track coming up. I did mention earlier that we had recorded two songs down in Portland. When we recorded Mount Olympus, we recorded a different song. We don't have a title for it yet, but as you know, we are a rapper-fronted band, but we also are fronted by a singer, and we use Matt. We use him as our like special weapon, if you will. And this next song that we have coming, he really stepped up and you know, basically wrote the whole thing. Me and Matt write a lot together as far as lyrics go, but he came through and really did his thing. So the next song out of Sus is definitely, it's more of a kind of like dopamine feel. That's kind of like the song that we have from our EP that's a lot more light and you know, singy. And so it'll be fun. It's like two polar opposites as far as like the gritty rap, and then we come in with something that's like beautiful and meaningful. So super stoked about that. And then we have down the road a little bit further, we have something that we're kind of experimenting with, a song that is really three songs. We've performed it multiple times, but we are focusing highly on production with this one. And so it'll be kind of a different feel out of Sus rather than the kind of raw instrumentation. We'll do a lot more production, and it's a 3-in-1 type of joint. So we're trying to figure out how to kind of put that together. So yeah, we're definitely working on some stuff, you know, and finding a new rhythm throughout this COVID. And it's been a bit of a blessing in disguise, because a lot of this production and mixing we're doing in-house now. And so,
oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's been fun, man. Nice.
That's awesome. Well, I'm very excited. I'll be sure to, you know, bump all that stuff in. Before we close out, I have a get stumped section, which is basically I'm going to give you two options, and off the cuff, you're going to give me your preference. And then I have like the big three questions that I'd like to end with before I let you go. So is preference Pharrell the artist or Pharrell the producer?
Gosh, so you mean like lyricist?
Sure.
Definitely Pharrell the producer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you look at NERD tracks, you look at Star Trek, you look at all that, and you're just like, bro, God.
Yeah. Busta Rhymes or Black Thought?
Black Thought. Yeah. Busta is crazy. Crazy. Like, if I had to let one go, that's crazy. If I couldn't ever.
Right.
But Black Thought, I would say, is slept on as one of. top five. Yeah,
I feel like with like true MCs, a lot of folks say that he's like, you know, when folks say there's like the comedian's comedian, I feel like he's like the MC's MC.
Doug,
you know, like people who know just like recognize how great he is, but never got like the mainstream recognition he deserves.
Definitely. I also about a year ago I read Questlove's autobiography, and incredible book. Like, that shit is crazy. Questlove's life is so tight. Like, you definitely read that book if you get a chance.
Yeah, I'll look that up for sure.
Yeah,
I'm excited. I love reading that kind of like the musicians or artist biographies.
Yeah, it's super tight. But hearing about Black Thought through that and already being a huge fan of Black Thought, I was just like, oh my God, this dude is crazy. Like, he's crazy, you know? So yeah, Busta's tight. Busta is an amazing dude, but yeah, Black Thought, easy.
For sure. Lupe or Kanye?
Wow. Definitely Kanye. I mean, yeah, I don't think Kanye could get Lupe lyrically, but Kanye is game changer, man.
Yeah, especially you're talking those neo soul vibes that you're into. I mean, especially the early stuff, like, that's it.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, don't even get me started. Like, Kanye is a weirdo. He's definitely a weird guy, and you know, he's done some strange things, but like 808 and Heartbreaks alone, like, look what that did to the game. That
yeah,
so much. And Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, I mean, name an album that didn't do some prior to, like, Pablo, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah,
100%.
So many classics, too many classics to even,
like you said, leading up to Pablo, a single one of those albums, you pick a handful of the tracks that came off each, and that's like most people's, like, that'd make most people's careers, like, the one album, and the fact that it was just like one after another is crazy.
Yeah, even the Yeezus, bro, like, that album is weird for people, but it's crazy. It's fucking crazy, like, you know. And so
yeah, I remember at Oregon games, they'd always be playing, I think Black Skinhead, they'd play when the team was coming out, and the whole stadium exploded every single time. I was like,
I run to that song, you run way faster to that song.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, oh, I need extra pump up, here we go.
Yeah, straight up.
And then writing during a jam or over a pre-recorded beat?
I'm definitely more of one to write by myself. So I'd say pre-recorded. However, I record all of our jams, and so I write to the recorded jams all the
time. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You just, like, that's exactly how my process is. So that's awesome. Because, like, for the band, that is, by myself, I just sit down. But yeah, I feel like there's something about that live energy that still comes through, and the ideas that pop in your head. Like, I'll never print a final lyric from a jam, but, like, the ideas sometimes, like, that energy.
Totally. Yeah, it's sometimes I'm very much in the moment with when we're jamming and practicing. But I try not to rush my stuff. Sometimes it just comes out. Mount Olympus is one of those examples. I sat down, probably wrote that in 20 minutes.
No way.
That's very rare. And usually I'm rewriting songs, you know, rewriting lyrics the whole time. So definitely recorded track is the way to go for me.
For sure. And then the big three I like to end with, I guess, is just kind of more bigger picture stuff, you know, for people to kind of, like, just hear your heart a little bit. Is like, why do you make music?
Yeah, man. Honestly, I make music to give different perspectives on things. I think music is, like, so vulnerable, and going back to, like, my shy days, I don't release a lot of music just because it is so vulnerable. And a lot of the times you put something out, and in this world, it's like, if I don't get 100 likes on this shit, then nobody fucked with it. And
right.
It's terrible. And, you know, but then again, like, maybe the one like on there that you maybe got is, like, somebody listened to that and it changed them, you know, it gave them some crazy perspective. That is one reason. A lot of the times, there's a particular song that we typically end our set with, and I am speaking about, you know, racial injustice in my particular piece in that, and my experience in that, I should say. And it's a trip that, but, like, every show, people come up to me and say, yo, that last song, like, I hear you, man. And it's like, hey, you know, like, if you didn't hear anything else, you know, that's cool that you heard that. And so I don't know. I really dig that, you know. That's one reason. Another reason is that I love the music community. I'm such a fan of music, live, recorded, all that. I listen to, gosh, I'm surprised I haven't heard of your band yet, because I've everyone and listen to everyone, you know what I'm saying? And so being a part of that culture, like a lot of my best friends are musicians, you know? And so I love that community. And then selfishly, music is just such a release for me, you know?
For sure.
Being able to write and create something that you can put together as an art piece is just unmatched, you know. There's no feeling like it. And so and then performing, man, that shit's crazy.
Yeah,
so that's it. Especially with just like the current times, and like how cathartic has it been, or I guess have you found it easier or more difficult to write just because of all the social injustice really being brought to the forefront of society? And then how has that, I guess, impacted your process and whatnot, if you don't mind me asking?
Yo, no, that's cool. That's a good question. Yeah, I am typically one who processes things for quite some time. And so I am sure that this whole experience is going to pour out of me at some point. I'm also... it's something that I'm not new to, you know? And so while all this is going on there, I grew up in Portland, man. And Portland is one of the more racist cities in this country. Surprisingly so. I mean, a lot of people don't know that, but I've had so many run-ins with the police. I've had so many run-ins with different aspects of racism in my life. So it's not really new, it's more of a shock. During all this, it's been a bit, not stunting, but it's been a lot, man. It's been heavy the whole time. And so I'm not one to force my stuff at all. I know that the ideas that I have, I have sections in my phone to where I just write down ideas and little one-off lines, but you know, Sus really hasn't been able to practice too much. And so I'm just kind of waiting. Like, I know that there's some shit that's about to come out that's like, you know, my next level. Next level stuff. And so writing, I've been keeping up, but you know, I've definitely wrote a couple songs that we're working on, but I feel more so like all the things that have happened this year, more about kind of building up to that point where we're back in our stride, and where I can come back to these times in my mind and say, boom, here's what we went through. So
what really stood out to me there is you said, this isn't new to me. What do you hope people get out of your music? How should people really be opening their ears and listening during this time?
Yeah, I mean, truly, I kind of hope that people just have a good experience through my music, you know. With the stuff that we do with Sus, I think just the fact alone that it's a rap artist with a singer over a band, that's not something that we see very frequently. Definitely a couple of cats out here doing it. Campana is doing it, Martial Law Band, you know, All-Star Opera. There's definitely some bands out there. With that said, you know, I think it's an important thing to bring this live instrumentation and get that feel while you're hearing these lyrics. And so typically I'm pretty careful about what I actually put into my songs, because I do want people to get out certain messages from what I'm saying. And in large part, you know, as cliche and fucking corny as it is, I want peace and love. And, you know, I suppose like a lot of the music that I write with Sus is based on uncomfortable situations and finding the bright side to those things. So Mount Olympus, for example, that song, from my standpoint, was really about being under great tension and how you kind of can take that tension, flip it, and make it into this thing where, like, all of a sudden I'm confident out of this tension. Like, you're pressing me, but this is what I got for you. And then Chima came through with the fucking perfect, like, counterpart to that of being like, I'm strange, and like, here's why that shit's hella tight, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's typically what I aim to do in my music, is like find a way that that I can take this kind of uncomfortable situation, or even if it's a light song, like a good feeling song, I'll take even the good and try to flip it into a thing where it's like, here's where it can kind of go left. And so I'm big about sharing perspective and having people open their eyes to look at something differently. Mm-hmm. I think that these days and any other day, people should listen to whatever the fuck they want, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I say that just because there's so much music out there, you know, there's so much out there, and I've come to respect so much of it because it's like this special piece of somebody that they're sharing out there, even if it's like, it doesn't feel like it's anything creative or complex or whatever it is, you know, it's them putting themselves out there. And I think music shouldn't ever be defined. I don't think it should be put in a box. I don't think you should, you know, be judged by what you listen to. Dude, I'm listening to some strange stuff right now. I guess depending, you know, like, I listen to a lot of King Krull right now, who is like very left from what, you know, I grew up on and stuff. But yeah, point being, like, I think you should listen to what makes you feel right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes that means listening to music that fits your mood. Sometimes that means listening to music that opens your eyes. Sometimes it means putting some, like, Kurungbin on the background and just kind of vibing out, you know. So, yeah, that's kind of my answer to that.
One last question for you. Looking back, right, what would you tell that 15-year-old self or 19-year-old self who's just getting into Fruity Loops or just starting to write?
I think I would probably tell myself, just do it. Like, don't ever hold yourself back. Just do it. And, you know, that's something that you hear so often from people that have gone through something and are looking back. But again, going back to like my shyness and things like that, I think I held myself back in certain ways, you know. That was my process, so it's all good. And that's what I needed to go through to get here. But yeah, just going for it and just, you know, learning how to just be comfortable with that. Because now, today, you know, whenever we get to do shows again, I just do it, man. I just go for it. And if it's not the thing, it's not the thing. And there's going to be another thing, you know, it's not going to be the end of my world. And so, yeah, just go for it.
For sure. I love that. And thank you so much for taking this time, man, and just opening up and sharing your story. It's really inspiring to hear. I really dig what y'all are doing. And like I said, you got stuff coming on out, hit me up. I'll be sure that we're pushing it, or I'm pushing on this end here. So, and taking the time on a Friday. So I appreciate you doing this. And
yeah, man, thank you for having me. This was definitely a good time.
I'm so glad to hear that. Yeah. Yeah. Cheers.
Yeah, man. Felt like a normal conversation. You know, that's how I prefer it. It didn't feel like an interview. It felt like a conversation. So
that's what it's all about. And it was great getting to meet you virtually here. Like I said, I've been listening to y'all for a while and seeing y'all, I guess it would have been at least a year ago. I don't even remember. COVID times got my brain scrambled.
Yeah. Hey, man, tell me about it.
Yeah. But all right, man. Cheers.
I just look, man, I just got all this tension. Oh, what I'ma do? Oh, what I'ma do with this tension? Fuck around, catch a hemorrhage, dog, I stay on 4%. My spit so Olympic, my aim on Olympus. See me slightly limping when that record get to spinning. Never smoking on that brown grass, no boy, I need my spinach. Yeah, lamping in the back on that observation. Doctor up a track and I'm hardly pacing. You gon' need a life jacket, how my wave been? Tryna stack it up, amen, fire Satan. Yeah, bustin' out of text brackets, to fly on these maggots. Smackin' up that whack shit, pack it out, that's crackin'. Delivery on Amazon and I'm snatchin' up that package. You keep doing that backwards shit, you gon' end up on that blacklist. With a fat lip on a sad tip, mad to see a PC maggot. Know about me, what you know about me? Never catch my team laggin', lip smackin' that steakhouse. You gon' get this takeout, look at the way my leg break. Now, tongue in the verse and I make out. Wow, yeah, I just got all this tension. Ooh, what I'ma do? Ooh, what I'ma do with this tension? Fuck around, catch a hemorrhage, dog, I stay on 4%. My spit's so Olympic, my aim out on Olympics.
What's
yeah.
Crackin', lackin', fast stackin', brother smooth, but ain't got no go for mackin'. Hodgepodge, both face in front of me, hopefully nothing will happen. Cruising through the city, leaving me to beat up, don't shift, no, don't fear. Out of body, Maserati, y'all will probably vanish and disappear. Gangsta linen, digging scenes, full moon, moon roof, don't act surprised. Pick a hotter pepper, Peter, pick a bone with you, girl, so why you lying? How I cross the finish line, I don't know, I just smile for these pictures. Pigeon toe, pimp, pissing back and forth, I'm just waiting for my baby. Slide up in the spot on tippy toes, looking like a witch. Everybody looking at me like I'm so sus. I said I want them to remember face, but not like this. I ain't even knowing where I am, but so what? Vampire, New Jack City, member Blade used to be a dope man. Fuck around, get your neck broken. When they put that needle on the record, it will make you
lip smacking that steakhouse. You won't get this takeout. Look at the way my leg break now. Tongue in the verse and I make out. Wow. Yeah, I just got all this tension. Ooh, what I'ma do? Ooh, what I'ma do with this tension? Fuck around, catch a hemorrhage, dog, I stay on 4%. My spit so Olympic, my aim on Olympus, yeah. Got all this tension. Ooh, what I'ma do? Ooh, what I'ma do with this tension? Oh Lord, I just got all this tension. Ooh, what I'ma do? Ooh, what I'ma do with this tension?
That was Mount Olympus by Sus featuring Remember Face. Huge shout out to Jesse for taking the time to come on the podcast. Like I said on the intro, I really dig what they're doing, so be sure to follow them on all the socials at sus.vibes, as well as on all those streaming platforms. Make sure you're catching all the latest and greatest tunes from them. And as always, if you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. I truly appreciate that extra effort, and I will see y'all next time.